Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.
Hello and welcome to another episode of My Property World. I'm Will Mallard and welcome to Sam Delaney. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me again, Will.
So Sam is one of the principals of Merry Oak Property Finance, and we're going to be talking about a deal summary of a bridge to development project that Sam got involved in the funding of. And there's a few squeaky moments along the way. So, Sam, before we get started, how would someone get hold of you if they were wanting to follow up on the back of this?
LinkedIn is a great way of doing that. I just type in my full name, Sam Lowney, Sam with two A's. Send me a message or connect with me. Happy to catch up with you from there.
Fantastic. Okay. And maybe just give the listeners a quick flavor of what you're up to and what Merry Oaks does. We've got a fantastic previous episode on Sam's, really, really interesting career to date within property and indeed property finance. And current state of play with Merry Oaks. What is Merry Oaks? What do you do?
So we are a property finance brokerage. We advise clients, SME property investors, developers on all of their funding requirements. So from cradle to grave, if they're looking at the development, the bridging, the development finance, the exit finance, the commercial term loans, smaller stuff, whether it be buy-to-lets, HMOs, holiday lets, and a whole weird and wonderful array of other stuff from auction finance to VAT bridging and equity planning costs. We do anything property finance related, we can usually advise on.
Okay, so we've got a really interesting deal to talk about. So where is it, what is it, and what are the rough numbers involved?
So there's one that we completed earlier this year, and it's been running since about middle of last year, so just towards the end of the summer. And it's with a good developer that we've done more stuff with, and they are very, very experienced as a in the construction game, being a building surveyor, quantity surveyor themselves, having worked on some huge projects for 20 years. And over the last few years, over the last 10 years or so, they've done some smaller stuff, but they really wanted to scale it to a larger, get larger and larger in terms of size and scale of the schemes that they're working on. Now, they also have their own group of businesses. So they offer professional services from project management, architecture, engineering. So they're providing this to other developers, whether they be SMEs or whether they be larger. So they understand construction inside out, the procurement, the materials, the cost of labor. They're very, very, very astute when it comes to that sort of thing, dealing with councils and stopping up orders and all sorts of stuff. So they are good developers. But in terms of funding, from a funding side, they're relatively newer in terms of either the larger deals that they've done under their own name, under their own development banner. And what should have been a straightforward deal to fund, unfortunately, had a few little hiccups and hurdles along the way. But you know, I think that that's the grit and determination you need to have as a developer from day dot. And you need to be working with other passionate people. I like to think that we were proactive throughout trying to make the deal happen.
And just briefly, like you've got a situation where you've got someone with some good experience, but it's a bigger thing than they've taken on as principal previously. If you think about the time frames of what's been happening over the past year or so, there's been a lot going on in the market, a lot going on in the financial markets. What caused you to back these people in particular?
I just love their passion, and they clearly had a background in property development and the vision going forward. They really want to scale and grow. I mean, everyone that we work with at Merry Oaks, I'd say 98%, 99% of the people that we work with, they all have that growth mindset. They all really want to go from, we always tell people, if you're doing hundreds of thousands pounds worth of projects, we want to get you to 1 million. If you're doing 1 million, we get you to 5 million. If you're doing 5 million, we get you to 20 million. Professionally, I've done stuff at the kind of eight figure end of the market. And, but personally, a lot of the stuff that I do personally is sub 1 million. So I understand what it is to grow and to help people go through those steps and phases. And this particular chap was very keen. He'd done the kind of six figure stuff. Now it's like, right, let's get into the seven, and then we're going to push on to the eight. So that was the big attraction. He had some experience. So although he would be considered under certain lenders' criteria as a first time developer, he would actually, in my eyes, he's a lot more than that. But it just means, nonetheless, we have to start small, think big, and grow incrementally. And I think that's the best advice that I give to anybody that was wherever you are in terms of your professional or entrepreneurial journey, to have that mindset of start small, think big.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so where was the site? What was what's there at the outset? What was the rough sort of deal structure and the vendors' situation and motivations?
So the interesting thing is this: the site itself was a row of garages. And it had been on the market, it'd been widely marketed with planning for over £1 million for quite some time. And it had been on the radar, but you could just run some very quick numbers on it, and you just never was going to stack it £1 million. Understanding how that residual land value calculation works is really important when looking at this stuff, so you don't overpay for sites. And unfortunately, for the vendor, nobody was biting it over £1 million. It came down to around kind of 950 and then 900. And we were actually interested, thinking at 850, it would be tight. It would definitely be tight. But at 850, we could maybe make it work. But we'd be more comfortable at, let's say, 8, just to be sure. So we actually offered 8. We run all the numbers with the developer. And we were getting backing from lenders at that level, subject to valuation, of course, but we felt like we could get it to value up without any issues. So, and with the build costs, obviously the developer really had his ear to the ground with that sort of thing. My background being an agent, we'd go out to a bunch of agents on his behalf, speak to them, make sure that we can get the GDV where we need it to be. And we did all of that, got the lenders on board, subject to Rick's valuations, of course. Anyway, this row of garages has planning approval for 7 residential flats, new build flats, right next to a tube station in northeast of London, just outside London, Greater London, kind of Essex borders, in Newbury Park. Really, really, really nice site. Really good design as well on the building itself. A tight road to get your all your materials and everything down. Which is one of the challenges, but for somebody that's been doing this stuff for the last 20 years or so professionally for other developers, it was just seemed like a walk in the park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've spent time in Hong Kong, where they know how to build big buildings, quite constrained access conditions.
Yeah, I mean, what they do there is incredibly impressive. I mean, the scaffolding.
It always is possible.
Nothing is impossible. Everything just costs you time or money, and some skill, of course, along the way. I mean, in Hong Kong, they literally use scaffolding as bamboo scaffolding. which you know always used to impress me. But yeah, like if you can build stuff there, then and they can build those sorts of things, this building certainly can be made. But I do know a couple of other developers that saw the site and thought that the access was tight, not impossible, just tight and problematic. But I think that that's where some people, wherever they see problems, you know, some people see solutions. And this particular developer is definitely one of those solution focused, which is part of our tagline at Merry Oaks, is that we, you know, we're very relationship driven and solution focused. Wherever there's a problem, just got to think about the solution and how we're going to get around it. It's not that we can't do it, it's how can we do it. So.
And do you think that's a reflection on the personality types of the developers, or more on the diversity of the skill sets that they have from their group of businesses?
I think that it is any successful entrepreneur's mindset. Whatever business you're in, whether you're selling postcards or sweets or professional services, I think you have to be solution focused, because inevitably you're going to come across hurdles. And you know, we were talking just before this about a whole bunch of different ideas and potential good business ventures. And I was throwing up, being devil's advocate of why it might not work. And then you came up with the reason why actually that's not necessary. And you have to be able to have people around you to have play devil's advocate, to role play and to think pragmatically constantly. Because as soon as you hit a dead end, you're checkmate, then you're out of business, and you can't allow that to happen. So this particular chap, similar to myself, is incredibly pragmatic. And it is one of the many reasons why it's a joy to work with him. Because look, some of the hurdles that we hit, if you quit, that's the only guarantee for failure that you've got. If you continue going, you persevere, you have a really good chance of coming out either largely unscathed or still fit and able to fight another day. And that's what's happened here. In fact, he's come out unscathed, largely unscathed. Obviously, he's taken a little bit of hit on the margin. But this, miraculously, sometimes wonders do happen. The £800,000 offer that we made, that they wanted us to get to 850, they declined the £800,000 offer. They were adamant that they were going to get it. And we just thought, you know what, that 50k is just too much to stretch. It's, we're already really on the line, we want to do the deal, it's at a good location, etc, but we're just not going to stretch it that far. So what we ended up finding out a few months later was that it was going to be put into an auction. Now, buying development sites from auctions, I wouldn't generally be a big fan of. I think it's too much risk, too short a time frame to do enough due diligence. I know a few people that are very good friends of mine that would argue otherwise, but I would say if you are going to do that sort of thing, this is the particular instance that you need to do it, because you've already done all the DD on the site anyway. We'd actually spent a load of time on it. We'd been down the site. He's got his own in-house engineers, quantity surveyors. So he's already gone into so much detail. He's had that luxury of time because he's seen it on the market elsewhere. So the fact that it was an auction kind of was a little bit of a bonus to us, because we knew that actually if we can get it at a good price in 28 days, we bought the property, no messing around, and we can kick on to the next phase, onto the construction, which is what this guy does best, and we can keep moving forward. But interestingly enough, they put on to at a very low guide price, which is usually a strategy that you'd find to generate loads of interest and kick the market, kick the price higher, etc. funnily enough, they didn't hit the reserve. They didn't hit the reserve, and the final price was something like 735, so far from the 850 that the guy wanted, and well below the 800 that was offered, a few months earlier. So we were able to go in there and negotiate. I say we, he was able to go and do that. And he managed to get it secured at 750. Under auction conditions, that was his condition. He said, look, I don't want this guy messing around on me again. I want to buy it under auction conditions and I'll pay 750, put the 10% deposit down now. Because we'd done all the research on it, he just knew that we were the best buyer for it. Anyway, happy days, gets it secured, 750. So then it's a race to make sure we've got bridging finance in place to be able to secure the site in 4 weeks. And of course, when you've got garages, you've got things like contamination risk, and you've got to get the valuation GDP. You've even got to get it's a residual land value really that we're going off. So we've got to know the build cost to be able to do that. So we managed to find a reasonably priced bridge lender to secure the site for us, given the high leverage that we wanted as well, because he's actually on another site as well, and he's plowed a load of money into that. But he's buying this to keep his pipeline going. So as soon as that one finishes, he can start on this one. But we were tight on cash, and we wanted somebody to be flexible. So we ended up paying for a little bit of a premium for the speed and flexibility, and the high leverage that we ended up getting. And that actually did go through quite smoothly in the first four weeks, in 28 days, completed. In the meantime, we were running in the background, piecing together the highest leverage capital stack that we could possibly do. Again, because the developer...
Can you just explain what that means for someone not familiar with capital stacks?
Yeah, so the capital stack is a way of building a funding, how should I put it together? Different funding blocks stacked on top of one another to be able to fund a development. When you're dealing with millions of pounds, tens of millions of pounds, it's really difficult for one particular entity to have all of that money in one place. So typically you'd go to one bank to get one portion of it. Most people think, right, I've got to come up with the rest. Well, whereas if you're building a capital stack commercially within property finance, et cetera, you can actually have different tranches, different segments of funding that have different connotations, whether it be the risk profile, whether it be the returns expectations, and whether it be the LTC or the LTGDV, the loan to cost or the loan to gross development value. So all these things mashed together between debt and equity, you create what they call a capital stack. So it'll be the senior debt initially.
How do you put all of the money together you need to do the deal? If you stacked it all up, what does that look like?
Yeah, so exactly. So you can, there's so many different ways that you could do it, but in a very conventional way, you'd get somebody to give you up to 75% of the cost for LTC. That would be normally your senior debt lender, and they could be charging you anything from 6 to 9%, 10%. Then you'd get a mezzanine piece on top, which would give you, let's say, another 15% of the cost. So you'd be up to 90% LTC. And that would be priced in with a second charge. So the senior lender takes the first charge, the mezzanine or junior lender takes the second charge. For that 15% LTC, that would be priced in at about, let's say, 20% all in, including fees. I've just been doing some mezz terms recently and they're becoming just over 20%, to be honest. So I definitely think that the market's pushed that pricing up recently. But then you've got 10% of project costs you still need to plug in somewhere. So if you don't have that, then what you can do is you can go and get equity. Equity is the riskier part of the stack. It's the more expensive. Of course, the risk-reward ratios have to be proportionate. And the equity usually is 20% plus. In terms of the return expectations, and that's in most cases preferred equity. And then the common equity, which is what the developer's skin in the game is, let's say the last 5% LTC. You can get 100% funding if you've got a good track record, you've got a good project with good margins, etc. But typically, if you were to build a capital stack, you could do it that way. But then there's stretch senior as well, so you don't need necessarily the mezzanine piece in. But then sometimes if you go above 65% LTGDV and 75-80% LTC, equity doesn't like to get involved. They only like to be on the on a lower levered debt stack. So there's loads and loads and loads of nuances. But all I knew at the very, very, core of what we were trying to do, the end goal here, was the developer had a very limited amount of capital. He was already on site somewhere else, so he wanted to keep that rainy day fund just in case that he had any cost overruns, and he didn't want to plow it all into this deal. So we had to get the highest leverage available for him, not only on the bridge, but on the development exit as well. So I come from a stretch senior kind of background of recent years, having been a lender. And I do value a stretch senior position because there's intercredit agreements that, you know, an extra legal cost and this, that, and the other that can cause a little bit of a nuisance unnecessarily. And of recent years as well, I found that some mezz lenders don't like to go as crazy high as they should do to make it worthwhile. So in any case, the first port of call, one set of legals, one set of underwriting, one set of valuations, and that's really what we wanted to focus on. If we can get all of the money that we needed in one stack. We found one particular lender that was offering stretch senior, and I could have taken this to the previous lender I worked with, but their minimum ticket size is 3 million. So this was a relatively smaller deal at 1.8 million. So I found this lender and, you know, we'd been speaking about other deals in the past and this was going to be a good deal for them. They'd done all the underwriting. We got the valuation reports back. We'd actually been to another, so yeah, we really went around the house with this one. We went to one stretch senior lender. They said that we could use our own valuer. And then when that valuation report came out, they said, oh, sorry, we can't use this valuation. It's like, well, why did you say that? Why did you say we could? And they clearly said in an email that they could. And they said, oh, but we didn't instruct them. It's like, well, you knew it was taking place. You knew it was coming. You knew it was instructed. You knew we paid for it. You knew you said that we can use it. Clear and black, and, you know, clear as day. And now that the reports come out, you're saying, oh no. And you even asked for a previous report to make sure you were happy with the standard of the report and all this stuff. Anyway, so that was really annoying that this particular lender did that to us. Anyway, so we switched to another senior lender, seemed much better. We got the valuation reports in, we got the QS reports in, everything came out looking rosy. We were happy. It took a little bit of pushing and pulling on the build cost because of all the volatility we've had in the market over the last 12 months, but we got there in the end, which was great. And literally 4 weeks prior to the target completion, which is when the original bridge was going to run out, we had confirmation that the underwriting had been completed, and therefore we were just waiting for the legals to be completed. And I think we were waiting for one of the reports, the build cost of the QS report to be finalized. There was a few little discrepancies here and there, and we just wanted to iron those out. But we knew we had a solid 4 weeks, iron out a few creases in the QS report, get the legals done, which would already been done when we bought the property. So we already know that there's nothing wrong with the title or anything like that. So 4 weeks should be ample and literally just perfect for when this bridge was going to run out. In the end, right at the end, 1 week before we're due to complete, they decided that they wanted to ask us more questions on the underwriting. And this was happened to coincide perfectly with Liz Truss's Trussonomics, and Kamikaze Kwasi's mini budget, literally about a week, 10 days earlier. So it was literally just poor timing. It really was unfortunate timing. That they started asking us more underwriting questions, like a little bit more about who are you again and what do your businesses do and what are you worth again and can you actually add can you throw in a little bit more security? We want corporate guarantee, we want additional security. And it's like, whoa, you said 4 weeks ago that you were happy with all that, so now why are you asking us for all this stuff? And obviously it was fairly obvious to us why they were doing that, but you can't say anything really. It's like, okay, these are the questions they're now asking, so either give it to them or they're probably going to pull the plug anyway. So we entertained it for another 2 weeks. We pushed back hard to try and get them to just honor everything that they'd said that they would, And in the end, we couldn't get to an agreement, and it was just going to go on and on and on forever. So in the end, we just had to pull the plug on them and say, you know what, you guys are messing it around. This is an impossible situation. You've just made it really difficult. And unfortunately, you know, we don't do business with that lender anymore, because it's, you know, that's just, it's just not how you go about doing things. So they lost a lot of goodwill, put it that way. Anyway, what we had to then do is scramble and go back to the drawing board and try and piece this together. And bearing in mind, if we had low leverage and we had loads of extra money to throw into it, we could have probably found something really, really, really easily, really quickly. But because we also needed high leverage, and because this was the largest scheme that he'd done on his personal name, there was a few jumps, you know, hoops to jump through. And because the market was pretty, you know, it was in turmoil at that particular time, we're in the eye of the storm, not many people were that bullish on lending. We really had to try to think long and hard about what's the best way of doing this. Anyway, the good news is that when we go to the market initially, we're quite thorough. We speak to a lot of lenders, so we plant a lot of seeds. And there was one or two lenders that we'd actually spoken to in great detail, and we'd actually progressed the deal with them to a certain stage where it was like, do you really want to do this with us or not? You've done a little bit of underwriting. We've checked out everything. And also the bonus was that we had the reports that, you know, these are Rick's chart surveyor reports that said the GDV is X and the build cost is Y. And so what we were also doing is we were going out to these lenders saying, we've got two reports. We need you to rely on these. We don't want to start the whole thing from scratch. So all we need to really do is go into legals. Can we do that? And this was starting to head right into Christmas already. So time was of the essence. And what we managed to do is find a senior lender to do the first part. And then the stretch bit, we would go to a mezzanine lender. Now, the mezzanine lender that we chose was going to give us the highest stretch. We could have gone with other mezzanine lenders that the senior lender had worked with in the past, or intercreditors wouldn't be an issue. But we decided that because we needed the stretch, it was a risk worth taking. And I'd had a lot of conversations with these guys to see if we could just...
And just briefly explain the intercreditor element with how mezzanine interacts.
Yeah. So... There needs to be an agreement between the senior and the junior lender. The junior lender is taking a riskier position, is getting paid accordingly, but they need to know under what terms the senior lender will act in a case of default. They need to know what rights that they've got in terms of when the receipts are being paid. What control do they have over insight over that process? There's a whole bunch of stuff that they need. And then like special conditions that some lenders will ask for, some won't. This particular lender was very, very keen on having the right of refusal, the first right of refusal in an event of default to buy out that loan, which I think is a super smart move by any mezzanine lender. You have to obviously be in a fortuitous financial position to be able to make that happen, whether you bring on some other debt or you've got deep pockets yourself. But they always do that. They always say, look, we want to buy this debt because we don't want you squeezing us out. You know, in a case of default, just come to us, let us know. We get the first, you know, ask us, do you want to buy our debt? And we can tell you yes or no at the time, but we want to have that luxury. And fortunately, I mean, the good news is most senior lenders are actually really happy with that, because when you're in a situation of default, it's not good for your loan book, doesn't look good, and who knows whether it's going to get better or worse from there. So if you can get an exit, you know, at a drop of a hat by a vested interested party that's motivated to get you out of it, it's actually a great deal and it really works well. So but again, there's some nuances about how that works, and you know, the borrower is not very happy about that, because he's like, well, it's in a case of default, like, give me some buffer, give me some time to actually get myself out of that situation. Anyway, the intercreditor, I mean, there's so many nuances with all this stuff. I always tell the team as well that I work with, it's like there's generalizations or there's general rules, but there's exceptions to every rule. So it's just like, you're like, you know, expect the unexpected. But the intercreditor is there is an agreement between the senior and junior lender to, so that they know in every situation or most situations how each other is going to interact with the other to make sure that nobody's left holding the baby in an uncomfortable or unwilling way. And usually senior lenders have worked with a junior lender in the past, that so they've already made that agreement so they can just kind of cut and paste off the shelf, have those agreements in place. But if they haven't, then that can add a few weeks to the discussions, because typically what solicitors will do is they will ask one question, next day they'll get the answer, then the following day they'll get one more. So literally just to talk about five different points can take 2 weeks on its own. So that did add some time to that, but the fact that they were going to give us so much more money than anybody else was in a short space of time just meant, and at a very good pricing, it meant that we had to stick with them. So long and short of it, let's try and speed this one up. We managed to get this through post-Christmas. We wanted to get it all done before Christmas, but I mean, getting anything done before Christmas as well, just as a heads up, like the deals that were already on the pipeline that should have been done end of October or through November, those are the ones that get prioritized to make sure that they happen in December. If you're one starting at end of November or December to try and get it through before the end of the end of the month before Christmas, it's not impossible. Nothing is impossible. I always say that. I think I said that to you earlier, but it's very, very difficult. So you can expect that it'll trickle through to January. This one trickled through to first week of February, like the first week back and this, that, and the other. But we got it over the line in the end. And you know what? As I said, the developer is a phenomenal guy, really, really strong character. He's fearless. I'm sure you lose a sleep at night though. You know, I speak to him regularly, but you need that kind of character to be able to juggle so many different things. To be a developer, you need to have nerves of steel. You really do. Otherwise, I don't think you'd last very long.
So that got the first bit in place. What was the feeling like when it actually got over the line?
It was relief. Sometimes those sorts of deals, like, you know, it's great to get a deal done, and I always have a little bit of a celebration inside of me. But sometimes, like these sorts of deals, you're just exhausted. You know, it's like you've probably spent more time on that deal, so your hourly rate is so low at the end of it. It's like, I don't care how much money I made on that one. It's, you know, it's kind of just exhausting.
I've got my life back again.
Yeah, you know, I can focus on the next part of my business. But I mean, when you've got prolific developers like that, the other development that he's doing is coming to a close. That might need a refinance. So you're constantly on this merry-go-round. This one's going to be finished in 12 months or so. So, and then this developer, because the other one's about to finish and he's going to hopefully sell those, he probably won't need a refinance, but he may do. But he's going to sell that one. So he's already thinking about the next one, which is great. I mean, this is the part of the business that I love. I wish the deals would go through a lot smoother. I wish that very, very first lender did the deal. And you know, we could have been in and out in a few months, well before the bridge loan expired. We had to speak with that bridge lender and we had to ask them for an extension. They were very, very accommodating, considering. You know, they could have charged their full default interest, but because we kept them abreast of what was going on, they managed to give us a good discount on that. And we were kind of keeping up the communication throughout, which is really important. But the most important thing is the result. If the developer's happy, if the investor's happy, if the client's happy, then we're happy. The fact that he was happy enough that he's still working with us, that he's still in contact with us, we're still looking at more deals, that gives me more satisfaction than actually getting the deal done in many ways, especially when it's been problematic. The fact that he trusts us, that we've done everything that we possibly can to make things happen and move on to the next deal so that we can, you know, right now this one is, it's got £1 million worth of build costs, £2.5 million GDV. You know, we arranged a £1.8 million loan, which was spread over a 1.6 on the senior and 250,000, including the interest and finance on the mezz. The next deal that he's looking at will be £3.5-4.5 million, that sort of thing. That's the kind of thing that gets me most excited is seeing that growth. And I think that's why people work with us, whether it be internally as the team, they see that that kind of growth mindset, and that's exciting for themselves personally to progress, or for developers and clients as well.
So you've put out over £100 million in development finance and bridge lending over the last number of years. What keeps you going with this?
A pure passion for property, everything property. You know, we were talking about homes, emergency homes, meanwhile homes. Like, I can have a conversation about, you know, super prime, you know, luxury homes. I like property, whether it be land, whether it be retail, commercial, industrial, shopping centers. I have a huge appreciation for every, you know, the land. We're sitting on land right now. It's everywhere. And in this country, we have an affordable housing crisis. We, you know, which is again, what we were talking about earlier, and how are we going to solve that? People like you and I that can spend, I don't know how many minutes on a podcast, but before that and after that, we're also talking about the same thing. We can almost talk about it forever. There's certain things that I can speak a lot more on and that I get more enthusiastic about. And I think for me, that's the kind of everyday middle of the road stuff, you know, for everyday people. I don't really do too much in the affordable housing sector or that end. And I don't do anything in the kind of super high end, super prime luxury. I'm kind of very much middle of the road, everyday people stuff, but it all excites me. So that's what keeps me motivated, is to solve those problems for investors, developers, and then the end user, whether they be businesses or families, professionals, etc.
So Sam Lowney, you can look him up on LinkedIn, Sam with two A's. I'm Will Mallard. This is My Property World Podcast. Thanks again.
Thanks again.
Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together. Whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.